Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 574 on Tuesday, the 15th of April, 2024. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. And this week we'll be discussing one tightrope that is being walked. In the new car news, we note someone has got handy with the louver making machine. And in points of interest, we ask what happened to an icon of the British roads. But first, we have some follow-up. And we're going to start, or I am going to start, with the EU's ongoing investigation into whether or not Chinese car companies have an unfair advantage thanks to state assistance.
Well, I think we all know the answer to that one, so let's move on.
Well, a study has come out and said that BYD has received $3.7 billion of Chinese aid. Since, when was this, 2020?
Yeah, 2020.
Yeah, which is quite a chunk of change and would contravene the rules that the EU has put in place for its own member states, and it tries to hold those that it does trade with to similar standards.
Yeah, good luck. Well, this is not a surprise to anyone. If you're surprised by this, then can you show me what rock you've been living under for the last 6 years? Because I'd quite like to join you. It's really, there's no surprise here. And this points out BYD. Of course, we know that this is across the board. This is just the big obvious one, really.
Mm.
SAIC, Geely, any of these other companies are also going to be receiving state aid. But BYD, because it's now pushed Volkswagen off the top of the sales and the manufacturing block in China, is the one that everybody's looking at,
yep.
Possibly because Volkswagen are going, look, in the way of a sort of middle-aged, grey-haired German man, because that's Volkswagen.
In the show notes, I'm also going to link to a Bloomberg UK article that explains what is going on outside of EVs to do with China, the EU, the US, and how this is actually going to get very messy. And this is part of how China is trying to effectively sell its way out of the financial difficulties it finds itself in at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it can do that because it has the natural resources. Worst case, it has the natural resources that it can sell and leverage, or just not sell, as the case may be.
Yeah.
On a global scale outside of motoring, it is something to watch and be aware of. Bloomberg article, it depends how many other Bloomberg articles you've read, whether or not you can, in the last month or week or whatever, where you can read it.
Yep.
Next up is possibly the last time we will ever mention British Volt.
Hopefully.
Me too. Recharge Industries, who were saying that they were going to take over the plant just about the point that it went into administration in January, still hasn't paid the money that they were meant to pay to the British Volt administrators. The chances are, right at the moment, that the site is going to be sold off to private equity firm. Oh, there's always a good three words there.
Yeah.
Blackstone, who seem to own or have shares in lots of stuff. They're one of these generic, faceless companies, so that they can build a massive data center. Data centers, of course, are wonderful for the local economy, sometimes providing up to, maybe tens of jobs.
That's not what the council believes, though.
Yes, but it's a council. These are, create more than 1,600 direct jobs and more than 2,700 indirect jobs over the course of the development.
Any of them
really
reside in Northumberland, though? That's the question.
Well, exactly. They're just going to ship people in.
Yeah.
Big construction firms, bring people in. Sure, the local hotels and pubs will get a boost for a little while during the construction phase.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, it'll fade off to nothing. I mean, we've all seen Silicon Valley where there's like two guys in charge of the massive data center. That's not a million miles from reality, really.
Mm.
I know that there's a massive data center on the outskirts of Corby of this kind of style. There are maybe five cars outside it during the week. Not great.
New news, though.
Yes.
And this came out last week, too much jumping and shouting and screaming, that a report has found that WLTP does not get the real-world fuel economy remotely correct.
But, Andrew, this is not really a surprise to most of us.
No.
Is it? Certainly, Motoring Podcast listeners understand that the fuel economy tests are indicative and not actually indicative of one vehicle against another and not actually real world. Mm. So what's new about this?
Well, what's new about this is that the exact real world data has been found thanks to the fact that the information has been sent directly from the cars as they have been used.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting real people doing real journeys and thus giving out the real results of their vehicles, which have then been averaged out.
Yep.
Now, this covers internal combustion engines and FEVs.
I'm curious to know if the people whose vehicles have been sending this out knew the vehicles were sending it out. Sorry, just in case, excuse the date. Sorry, scientific person. Just, you know, because that might skew it, but we don't know. Okay.
Well, I've read the reports that have been produced by the EU Court of Auditors, and there is certain elements missing from there, because I looked at the FEV one against the ICE, because one of the statements is that FEV average CO2 is 139.5 grams per kilometre. But then the conclusion was that because the cars hadn't been plugged in, oh, dreadful, you should not have FEVs. And you sort of go, well, depends what your aim is. Is it to reduce CO2, which is on average 23% better than an internal combustion engine, even when they've not all been plugged in as often as they should be?
Yeah.
Or is it to make a new industry, the electric car industry? There's all that stuff that we usually put as a little caveat for any of these statements that come out. But what is also interesting, which wasn't in the data, is how these vehicles are used.
Yeah.
If you're a FEV owner, particularly early adopter, you did it because there was tax breaks. And that's the big thing that a lot of anti-FEV people say. Oh, they just did it as a tax break. They run it on petrol. They never plug it in.
And I may have been guilty of saying that myself, because I've met plenty of people who have literally said that out loud to me, and I wanted to smack them.
Yeah. And there are equally plenty of people who jump up and down when a FEV is plugged into a public charger. So, you know, swings and roundabouts here, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, exactly. Why are these FEVs plugged in? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But thinking about those early adopters, they are probably people who could not make the switch to an EV or weren't confident to make the switch to an EV because they had significant mileage to do.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they are going on motorways, doing longer things when the electricity will run out effectively.
Yes.
On a FEV, whereas an internal combustion engine is doing a mix of all the sort of local journeys, longer journeys, stuff like this. It would be interesting to see it up against EVs, because as even the Advertising Standards Agency, the lunatic organization of the UK, has stated, you cannot put WLTP on electric car adverts, but you're still allowed to for FEVs and ICE. Never mind.
Yeah, don't go there. It's best not to think too far into what the Advertising Standards Agency says and does as a third party. I get is that it's just like, is it a Tuesday?
It could be that the moon is in the right quarter of the sky. Who knows?
Yes.
But getting back to my point on this is their use cases will be different. I suspect, I don't have any obviously empirical proof of this, but it'd be interesting to look at the length of miles they use, the type of roads, the speeds, because if you're getting the CO2 MPG information, you can get that information as well from the cars. Are they judging like for like, or are they judging apples against oranges, or are they judging apples against a table? We don't know, because the information in the report wasn't enough to actually drill down into the data.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I think it's interesting and an important step, but we shouldn't hold completely with what has come out, because there's so many questions around it. And they also came out with a lot of statements that felt as though they had made up their mind and then went looking for data to justify what they were saying. And one thing that was pointed out to me as well, this could mean, and what is being asked for, is there is a change in the system of how cars are taxed or penalized, or car makers are penalized if they don't produce enough zero emission vehicles at the tailpipe. But it was pointed out to me, because I said, well, there's a bit of sympathy there for the car manufacturers, but I was reminded that, don't forget, when the WLTP came in, the car industry fought very hard to have it watered down.
Yeah.
There is a certain amount of, I am sympathetic that there is yet more change probably hurtling your way, but on the other hand, you have caused a lot of this yourself.
Yes. Well, ultimately, we can all blame Volkswagen. Because WLTP was a knee-jerk reaction to the Dieselgate stuff.
Yeah.
And because it was just so knee-jerk and so not really 100%, possibly not 100% properly thought through and the implications and stuff, then I can understand the car industry fighting back on that and arguing back and probably, instead of only bashing off the sort of rough edges and smoothing them, no doubt they've tried to sort of reshape the whole thing. But so there's a balance. I'm not 100% sympathetic, but I can understand why they probably fought back. There's no probably about it. Why they fought back against the WLTP, because it was brought in so quickly. And I think that actually these reports are showing up that the difference between even WLTP, which is meant to be more realistic, and real life are still there. There's still the same rift. But I also don't believe that any form of lab, inverted commas, tests will actually manage to do it. And it's great being able to collect all the real world data from all the real world stuff and all the real world people. But you can't do that until you've launched the vehicle. And you can't launch the vehicle until you've got the WLTP stuff. It swings roundabouts and chickens and eggs and all of these things.
Yeah.
About how you're actually going to go about it. And I think more people just need to realize these numbers are for comparative use, not for real world use.
We all know that you do not expect an internal combustion engine to hit the MPG that's quoted by the manufacturer.
But
I think because they've been in that they've been in circulation that long that nobody goes, oh, well, I'm going to hit 50 mile a gallon. How come I'm only hitting 42?
Stuff like, well, that's nothing compared to Fiat Twino. Fiat Twino, provided you never use the engine, it's incredibly efficient. But as soon as you actually want to move, then you completely trash it.
But to be clear, in this report, though, the EU countries themselves get a good kick in as well for not doing things they should have been doing. This has been, it has looked at all the whole situation and has not just picked on, as it were, the car industry. Everybody to do with this has got a telling off.
Yes. Jolly good. And that's how it should be. You're all staying in after lunch. Next up, Lotus. Lotus has posted a £594 million loss for 2023, whilst at the same time delivering. Now, some publications have gone just 7,000 cars. And I read that and went, 7,000 Lotus in a year? That's great.
Mm.
And it is. It's the highest volume ever.
Yep.
That they have built and delivered in any year ever. And brought in $679 million, not pounds, by the way, so be aware of the difference, of revenue. That's blooming good.
Mm.
Of course, the reason for the loss is a massive change, massive development effort going on. I mean, they are basically rebuilding the factory, as well as building and acquiring space within Geely factories to build the Electra. Have I got the right one?
Yeah.
Yes, Electra. And
no, Amira, sorry.
No, Electra, the SUV in China.
Yeah, but the Amira is well going to be built in China.
Oh, right, okay.
So we're both right.
Yes, we are. There we are. High five.
Yes.
And a massive surge in sales at the end with the Electra making up 63% of the yearly volumes and stuff like that. Yeah, the numbers are quite scary, but the amount of change and what's that's been already been spent on, which is already showing the benefits of actually being able to build more cars than ever before, and most of them being in the last quarter as well, does seem to be going the right way.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to hit their 150, or I'm very skeptical that they'll hit their 150,000 annual sales a year by 2028. I think that's, I admire a stretch goal, but that's quite large.
I mean, can you imagine Lotus selling more than 50,000 cars in a year? I think that just sounds phenomenal. I know some people go, well, is this a Chinese EV with a Lotus badge?
No, it's not.
I don't believe it is, actually. It isn't. Yeah. No.
Don't pick up your phone or your laptop or anything like that because it's got a Chinese battery in it. You know, it's just such a silly thing to say these days.
Yep, totally agreed. Not so great that they made the massive loss, but I don't think that this is one of those forever and ever things. I think that it is the investment.
Yeah, it's not a doom gloom Lotus story, that at all.
No, not at all. So please don't mistake it for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to take us on to Stellantis, and woo, it's been a bit of a week for them.
It is, and this is a little bit of a Stellantis week, yes.
Yes. The week started out last week.
The year began in early January.
Yeah, the CEO, Tavares, having sort of quite a public spat with the Italian government because they have been cozying up to Chery Auto to try and bring them in to increase the output for the nation's automotive manufacturing.
It's not just Chery. They've been trying to cozy up to Tesla as well.
Oh, right. Okay.
Basically anyone who's not European.
Oh, that seems quite...
Hooray for populist governments.
Yes, that's a good move. And Tavares has sort of gone, just be careful that you don't do that because you should be supporting us who are an Italian stroke French company who are employing, actually right now employing Italian people to build cars, etc. Although we'll get onto some of that later.
In factories in Italy.
Yeah. This has been quite a silly one, I feel, on all sides. And then, of course, whilst not content with beating politicians with a big stick, he then had to deal with the rumours that came out that some of the brands were going to be sold off. And he said, no, this is fake news. I hate that phrase.
I hate it too. But...
Because it just implies so much. This is fake news, and they're not going to sell off any of their brands. Because we have to remember, they're still in the process of assessing who's going to survive, who are the strong... Because he's made it clear, hasn't he, to all the brands, or the board has, that only the strongest will survive. And that we don't know how many that means, whether actually nobody gets culled or whether lots get culled or something in between.
I think they're probably aiming for nobody to get culled, to be honest.
I would think so, considering they probably want financial help from various governments, and they've got car companies in each of those home territories, so they can't say... Can't turn around and go, oh yeah, we're ditching Fiat. We've sold Fiat.
The ones that are most likely to go, because the German aspect is the least important one, are Opel and Vauxhall.
Yeah.
Because they're the countries that are least likely to give support to it, because the German government gives it all to Volkswagen and gives the impression of giving it all to Volkswagen and BMW and Mercedes-Benz.
Mm.
British government.
Who knows?
Will give it JLR.
Well, who knows? With whatever government we're going to have as well.
Yes, but the French, the Italians, we know over here Chrysler is... What is Chrysler? You can't really buy... I don't think you can buy a Chrysler right now. I think they've all been stopped. And Dodge, and the American ones, actually. I said Vauxhall and Opel earlier on. Actually, your Dodges, your Chryslers, they are the most likely to go. Jeep and Ram will survive over here.
No, they can't, though.
Why not?
They may just shut them. They won't sell them off because...
Oh, they'll never sell them off.
Because the American government won't allow them to be sold to the Chinese.
No, and they're the only people that would buy them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the week that was for Stellantis.
Yeah, sorry.
In a week where they launched a new vehicle, they spent an awful lot of time trying to bat back pretty pertinent questions.
Yes, they really did. And we'll talk a bit more about that later on when it comes to new car news. But next up, though, Volkswagen. Speaking of China, Volkswagen is to invest $2.7 billion in a Chinese production site. Once again, Volkswagen seems to find a magic money tree only a short while after the roof being on fire.
Mm.
I wonder where that might be, or if the money is coming via Chinese partner Xpeng. That's X-P-E-N-G. To see if possibly, you know, what we maybe talked about at the start of the show.
No, but they've said that Volkswagen themselves are investing this money. Because don't forget, CARIAD have to save $400 million in the next week. All the other brands have been given impossible deadlines because CARIAD had to do that deal to not lose any staff, to become more efficient. And one of the big things they're going to do is use AI to sort the code. Because that'll save them time as they spend all that.
This is a podcast, so you can't see the look on my face of just sheer sort of boredom and disbelief at that kind of thing. So that's going to be hilarious.
Because on top of where have they got the money?
Code with six fingers.
Yes. On top of the money that they've somehow found down the back of the couch, don't forget they are going under increasing pressure from investors and politicians into their connections with China and their partners and what their partners may or may not be doing when it comes to workforces and the likes.
Mm-hmm.
This is a desperate attempt to halt their slide in the Chinese market. I get what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
However, it's a heck of a gamble.
Yeah, but I think they're at the heck of a gamble stage, really.
Mm.
what's the alternative? Walk away from the Chinese market. It seems a bit stroppy if you just happen to have slid from number one to number two.
Mm. Right, I am going to take us to the EU Parliament. I know we've done a lot of cross-pollination of stories this week. The EU Parliament has approved stricter CO2 standards for trucks and buses across the continent. There will be the rule that all new buses should be emission-free from 2035, and almost new trucks need to be from 2040. There are some caveats. There are certain sectors that are exempt from the regulation, and these are small series manufacturers. I don't understand what that is in the lorry world, though. Is that very bespoke?
Yes.
Okay. And for vehicles for mining, forestry, and agriculture, that makes sense to me. Vehicles for use by the armed forces and the fire brigade, again, makes perfect sense. And vehicles for use in civil defence, public order, and medical care. Again, these are all vehicles that you want to be able to run at any time at no notice.
Mm.
And possibly for a long period of time.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. No, there is a difference between buses and coaches. So our buses, zero emission by then. Yeah, the coaches is slightly different because of the longer distances and stuff.
Not a surprise.
No, there's a mention of e-fuels as well, by the way, about some concessions around that, but not a huge amount.
I think it's the same around like cars.
Yeah.
If you can hit these caveats, then go for it.
Yeah, basically. On a similar note, and last one before the break, obviously, the announcement about a £100 million plan to electrify London's buses. This is coming from the UK Infrastructure Bank. You might not have heard of it, but it is state-owned and it's taxpayers' money. They and some investors have formed this £100 million fund, and it will help fund a partnership between Rockrail and Aviva. And it will see the in order to build all the associated infrastructure, such as start charging stations and all of that kind of thing.
Plus up to 250 new electric buses.
Yes.
As well as all that infrastructure stuff.
And the first 60 battery electric buses, which will be funded from that, will be leased to Go Ahead Group and put on routes throughout London.
Lucky London.
Yeah, I know. I mean, London started electrifying buses a while ago. Was it 2006, is it?
Yeah, I saw something there with the first hybrid.
Yeah. With the dare I say, the Boris bus. The Hilton Holloway bus, because it came out of an Autocar article.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's cool. Some people really don't like it because there's not a lot of headroom and all sorts of stuff like that, but I think it's cool. And so it did start quite early, and it has made, that kind of thing has made a significant difference, but there are still an awful lot out of the 36,500 buses in London that are still diesel-powered.
The UK, that is. That's not London.
Oh, pardon me. Well, it could have been London. Everything else is London.
Yeah, I know. The article flip-flops between the UK and, oh, this money's just going to London.
Yeah, apologies. Anyway, that takes us to Guilt Minute, the traditional quick break in the show where we ask for a tad of financial support, keep the lights on, and the hosting running. If you feel the Motoring Podcast is worth a small consideration every month, then you can become a patron. Different levels of patron include different levels of commitment from us to you, including being able to watch the show recorded live. We also have a small range of merchandise in our spring store, from stickers to mugs and t-shirts. If you don't have any spare cash, and we do completely understand, then you can help us by following for free from a podcast player or on YouTube to receive every show as they're released, and by liking and rating the show in whatever way your podcast supplier lets you. If you've done all of that, and some of you do, so thanks very much, then the last thing you can do is to recommend us to your friends or colleagues.
Thank you, everyone that does. Can I just add quickly here, because sometimes people don't listen to the parish notes. Shame on you all. Shame on you.
You should be listening to the very last second.
But Google Podcasts is either shut down, depending where you are in the world, or is about to shut down any second now. And therefore, we need to know from our Android listeners what podcast apps you use and do you like them. I asked the question today on Twitter as we record this, so that's Tuesday. And I got a few notes for Pocket Casts, which we have used on iOS. And no, it is cross-platform, and it is very good. And if you go do a Google search, it is one of those apps that is always put up. But we need to know what app most people use so we can change our link to help get you to the latest episode as quickly as possible in what you listen via.
Yeah. Google themselves are recommending YouTube podcasts. That's really where Google Podcasts is moving to. They want you to use the YouTube, is it YouTube Music app? And you can get the podcast through there.
Yeah, YouTube Music, but it's on the normal YouTube as well.
It's on normal YouTube too, and you get an audio version with just a picture of our logo.
Yes.
Running throughout, which from our end, it seems to work really well.
Yeah.
And it is cross-platform as well. As ever, one platform we're not on is Spotify.
No, never will be either. If you could let us know, either get in touch with us on Twitter or use the form on the website, that would be greatly appreciated. Because like I say, we want to help people find the show in the right area.
That means I have to find people's email in amongst all the advertising rubbish that I get for things like, do I want to make more sales, manage our payment, manage our financials, and all the other guff that comes into my podcast account.
Yeah. Anyway, new car news. No, I've just given him a job.
It makes me clear it out. I think it's at 700 on red right at the minute. I need to clear it out because that's not like me. But yes, shall we move back to actual car stuff and the rest of Stellantis' fun week with naming?
Yes. The Alfa Romeo revealed their latest SUV, a smallish SUV, called the Milano, the Junior, because there was an Italian politician who said that it was illegal for the car to be named Milano because it was not built, let alone in Italy, because it's been built in Poland.
I have no idea. They obviously seem quite happy with the idea of the Ferrari Roma, which is built in Maranello. But there are obviously no issue with the Ferrari Roma.
No, because it's not a real law.
No, I was about to say.
Everyone in the who is reporting on this, please do some basic research.
Well, not everyone. I think that's slightly unfair. There are
you haven't seen Twitter this morning. That's why you're not thinking that.
Oh, okay. Because I'm looking at here and it says, and all the wise ones just quote to the minister again. As I said, populist Italian politician. I don't want to run to stereotypes, but.
Yes. So what they've done is they have changed it to Junior, which does hark back to their past. Obviously, they have had models called the Junior. But they have changed the name, and I'm quoting here from CEO Jean-Philippe Imparato, to say, in the spirit of promoting mutual understanding, even though, as he says, we know that we are not required to do so.
Yes. They're not saying he's lying, but just let's get on with it and move on. On the other hand, loads of extra publicity. The car itself, because yes, let's not forget that amongst all the other stuff. Again, small SUV, it's the 2008 platform.
C4, the Fiat 600 and the Jeep Avenger, yeah.
Yes.
So it's that sort of, it's not the baby SUV, it's the next one up.
Yeah, it's the Gennaro one. But right. There is a difference of opinion between Andrew and I, because I quite like the big plastic grille. And I think on the right colour, it looks great. The press photos so far seem to have been, I don't know, there seems to have been some, they weren't allowed to use lights or something, because everything is in the half gloom.
It's to give it mood.
Is it? It's to make me have to sit here and squint at the darn thing to work out what it looks like. I wouldn't put too much faith in the press pictures. So far, I think that when you see it on the road, it's going to look very different.
Yes, it's going to look cheap and nasty. This is our different of opinion.
I still quite like it. I think I prefer it to the mesh grill.
Whereas I like the mesh grill with the Alfa Romeo name written across it. But that is what design does, isn't it? It's
like an ATV.
It's subjective, yeah. And it's personal of what we like. I mean, one thing I think we could probably agree is that the rear lights do not hark back to the ZS as they were trying to claim. I think they have stretched their marketing BS quite. No, it's got a dark patch across the back. Whoopee-doo.
Okay, I give you that. I guess I'm inclined to. But at least it's distinctive.
Mm-hmm.
At least it's distinctive. And the interior looks very Alfa Romeo like. Obviously, really what matters here is how it drives, I guess.
Yeah, does it feel Alfa Romeo on the inside? Because this is a cross-platform, you know, it's a shared platform. And the cars that have so far been tested and have come out on this platform get really good reviews.
Yeah.
The platform itself is good. Now, the question is, how the Alfa Romeo engineers have fettled with it to make it Alfa Romeo-y, isn't it? Because that's good. Yes. That's the key, because it's, I think the internal combustion engine version is going to start at about 30 grand or 30,000
euros,
about 26,000 pounds over here.
Yeah, and that's 30,000 euros.
Guessing adding 10 grand for the EV version,
yeah,
which seems to be the bog standard at the moment.
Yeah, so there's the number of power plants available. There's a Junior Hybride, which, by the way, it's curious that they've actually translated it, because whenever I went to the Italian Kia website yesterday to see whether or not they sold the Kia Sorento in Italy, which they do, it is spelled hybrid and plug-in hybrid, which I'm intrigued to hear an Italian pronounce that. It's plug-in hybrid. Hybride makes more sense. 1.2 litre, 3-cylinder petrol, 48-volt starter generator, mild hybrid. Well, not quite mild hybrid, pardon me, because it does have 28 brake horsepower, electric motor, 6-speed auto, and can run EV for short distances. Not very far, then. Front-wheel drive at the minute, four-wheel drive coming later. The Elettrica has 54 kilowatt-hour battery, good for 255 miles. That's pretty chunky. 100 kilowatt charging, front-mounted 154 horsepower motor, but with a specific calibration aimed at providing excellent performance and an engaging and very sporty drive, like every Alfa Romeo.
Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, we are available for voiceovers for all your product needs.
I've driven a Mito, so I'm not 100% certain I agree with that. Lots of bits and pieces. There's a Veloce variant of the EV, 237 brake horsepower again, a Torsen limited slip diff, just like the Abarth 600E, front rear ARBs, which are firmed up, best-in-class driving dynamics, blah, 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 blah. Most direct steering in the segment. But basically, what they're trying to tell us is that there's lots of bits. It isn't just a Jeep Avenger with a different front.
Mm-hmm. That's how I'm reading it. But there will be a link in the show notes to the Autocar article for you to read more, because this is quite a good chunky article.
Yes.
And you can have a look at the pictures yourself and see whether you agree with either one of us or neither of us.
Mm-hmm. But speaking of the definitely not built-in Sorento, Kia Sorento.
Yes, they have refreshed it for 2024. And it is going to start at £41,995, but you are getting an awful lot for that money. This is a 7-seater SUV with two almost proper seats in the back, the very back.
Yep.
And it's going to be fitted with the latest driver assistance tech, as well as a virtual key.
Okay, yes. All these things that Andrew loves. Looks-wise, by the way, they claim they've made it look more like the EV9. It has EV9 looks. It doesn't. It looks like an EV9 that you've ordered on Temu. Okay?
It looks like the last Sorento that they've made a bit smarter. And there was nothing wrong with that.
It's not unpleasant, but it doesn't look like an EV9 unless you stand well back, squint, and turn your back. Sorry.
Sorry, Kia. Yeah, you've stretched that one a bit too far there.
But fantastic spec, though.
Yeah, the top of the range is £50,695. And whilst some may go, I'm going to spend that on a Kia, you are getting an incredible amount of quality for that nowadays. This is, I think we should be well beyond the idea that Kias and Hyundais are cheap Korean imports. They are way beyond that now. They are making very good cars. This is also going to come with, and this is very interesting, diesel and petrol engines, as well as hybrid and plug-in hybrids, because of the use case they have from actual customers.
One of the things about the Sorento, certainly over the last couple of generations, is very, very popular with the towing set. I think it can tow about 3 tons, if not getting towards 3.5. It was one of the very few SUVs out there that could handle a double horse box type of thing. So between the horse boxes, caravans, and people who do those, then that has been quite a significant market for the Sorento over the last few years.
Mm.
And they're not giving up with that. So there's a 2.2 litre diesel, there's 1.6 petrol hybrid and plug-in hybrids, the most powerful of all being the plug-in hybrids.
Yep.
And the hybrids get 6-speed auto, diesel gets 8-speed dual clutch. there's a specific market for this car.
And it's going to do well again.
Yeah. There's no reason why not, to be perfectly honest.
Yep.
It does say part of the looks are inspired by the Telluride. Doesn't look like a Telluride either. Which is the US market bigger than...
large SUV.
That's the... Yeah, okay. Yeah, but it's the US market even bigger than the Sorento SUV, which is so popular here.
No, I think it's because they've got four wheels on them.
Yes,
and that's doors. What makes that's, it look, that's yeah. the identical look. Yeah.
Are we going to get rude messages from
I expect
from Kia,
I am. So well, let's yes. move on and talk about Morgan, please.
Morgan has updated the look of the Plus 4, and it just makes it every time. Morgan has updated the look of something.
Surely they put that now in deliberately.
I'm sure. And you
if
open
not,
it and you go,
they've missed a trick.
And you open it and you go, it's a Morgan.
Yes.
It looks the same as Morgans have for what, 70 years, if not longer? Possibly getting on for 80.
And it's a very appealing look, I have to say.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's an incredibly appealing look. What they've really done here is supposedly the Plus 4 got a bit bigger in 2020 whenever they changed the architecture. What they've done is they've sorted out the proportions so it looks just like an older Morgan. At the same time, I mean, that's a fair bit of re-engineering in itself.
Mm.
And at the same time, they have basically designed more bespoke parts for it.
Yeah.
Instead of being off-the-shelf headlamps, they are now Morgan Plus 4 specific, wing mirrors, interior, rearview mirror, all of these kinds of things. Tail lights, all those sort of bits have been updated. They are now Morgan specific in the pursuit of better quality, more reliability, all of these kind of things. And also a bit less of the chance of that old kit car type thing, which used to happen with classic British sports cars. And quite frankly, at the price point they have to reach these days is just not good enough.
They're now so confident in their product that it's a three-year warranty.
Yeah, full three-year warranty. I was impressed by the premium Sennheiser sound system in it, that kind of stuff. It's a proper luxury car. And to be honest, when it says the updated car is now on sale at £62,500, that sounds like a little bit of a bargain. I mean, I don't imagine many owners are going to use it as their daily. It might be a little bit drafty, I suppose. But I don't think that's
I don't mind
ridiculous.
Giving that a go for 6 months or so.
I would happily, yeah.
If Morgan wants someone to, you know, really stress test it.
Yeah. No, I think it's great.
Oh,
I think
it's just green nice. As well.
If you do follow the link to the Autocar article, that'll be linked in the show notes, then the green, that sort of sage green, is particularly nice. And I love the alloys.
Mm.
It's just really cool.
Yes.
It's just cool. Morgans are just cool.
Yep, absolutely.
There's no stigma to a Morgan. I think that's what it is.
No, not at all.
Because I just glanced over at the screen. And there's a little thing at the side of the next story showing an Aston Martin. And I think with Aston Martin, I like Aston Martin. But the first thought is, yeah, they want to be James Bond, don't they? You don't get that with a Morgan. Anything like that.
I'm going to take us on to the news that Rimac is going to supply BMW, their next generation vehicles, with the batteries. This is for whatever comes out of the newer Classer design studies that they're doing at the moment. I mean, we had the saloon that I was not exactly over the moon about, and then there was the SUV, which I was even less over the moon about.
They are getting increasingly ugly. They've started from a decent place, because I quite liked the saloon. But then the SUV is just gopping, technical term.
They didn't slash and dent the sides. At least that was clean, but that was about it. However, this is all about Rimac, actually, and the business and the technology that they've done and how they have become integral to the European car industry, really. And I think it's just a fantastic story of how they've achieved it, what they've done, and now this just makes the business so much more viable if they're supplying someone like BMW with their product, because they're changing their latest arrangement. It's going to be cylindrical cells as opposed to prismatic, which will offer 30% more range and allow for faster charging speeds and reduce the weight. We talked about this last year or the year before. BMW said they were going to go to cylindrical.
Yeah.
But we didn't know who their partner was, and it was obviously Rimac.
Yes.
But now they've officially come out and said these things.
It always seems strange to me that, because my little engineer brain says, well, let's pack everything as tightly as possible so we can get as much energy density. But of course, what you actually want is the gaps between, so you can run the coolant through it.
Yeah.
The more efficiently you can run the coolant through it, the faster you can charge, and ultimately also the faster you can discharge, but more to the point, the faster you can charge. There's a certain point where the more space you have between your battery cells inside your pack actually makes it quicker, better, faster, but you are trading off that in an overall energy density for speed of charging. I think people care more about speed of charging, really.
Yeah, because I saw there's one much more affordable EV that has been found out to not have energy control or as much energy control on the battery packs. So therefore, how you can charge it is very limited. And not many people have noticed this, but it's just starting to be muttered.
Oh.
This is part of what we who talk about cars need to help educate the public. There is a variety of, this is new technology still, there is a variety of things you have to consider.
I made a couple of comments on Twitter yesterday about the difficulty of traditional motoring journalists reviewing cars where they become as much about the technology as about the carness, and the other way around, technology correspondents, technology people reviewing cars, and there's a difference between them. And that neither one does a comprehensively good job.
No, I think that's fair.
With very few exceptions, I think.
Yeah.
And even then, I might have to think about that for a while, because there's such an intersection of the two. And this kind of battery tech stuff is a fine example of that.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to get that rounded opinion on stuff. I mean, the most obvious one is, of course, when people have been talking about the flipping Cybertruck.
Mm. I saw in the wake of what happened to Fisker, somebody who reviews vehicles saying, was the review that is claimed to have killed the company, which is absolute nonsense, that statement anyway, was that too harsh? And I went back to that person. I said, no, there is far too much that is being written that just glosses over problems or doesn't even consider the end user and is talking about this touchscreen rather than how to plug it in, how easy where the position is, or that the engine is poor, or, you know, all this. There's so much that is not really critical and looks at it with critical eyes, because how is the car industry supposed to get better if nobody says, actually, that's an issue?
It's not just that, but I also have this with the driver assist stuff. Sorry, we're going off into a rant here. But I also have this with the driver assist stuff. People say, oh, I get in the car and I turn off all the driver assist stuff. And I turn off the lane keeping, I turn off this. So how on earth are you meant to know and feedback and say this is not good if the first thing you do is turn it off because you don't like it? Mm-hmm. Surely there's a problem there. You've at least, whilst you might not like it, you should ruddy well suffer it so that you can say if it's not good from a point of knowledge and expert and experience, as opposed to, I turn this off because I'm a driving god.
Yeah. Because you don't know how far it's progressed.
Buck up,
because they have changed from stuff that was out last year, the year before, because the rules change.
And different manufacturers release stuff that's different qualities as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then we find that there's personal preference comes into it as well. You don't like the Volkswagen Adaptive Cruise. I really like it. I think it works really nicely and adapts well and it suits my driving style. And I like it, but you don't, because it's not the same as the way that you're driving and you're expecting it to behave.
Yeah.
So there's a certain amount of, you know, whilst there is personal preference, you don't know if you've got those ruddy personal preferences unless you try it.
Yep.
So stop turning everything off and just bloody suffer it.
Yeah.
At least for a day or two.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of being cross, and let's move on to being sad.
Yes, exactly. I was going to say, no, now I'm just sad. And yeah, we all know that all the cool kids drive V8 Lexus. Unfortunately, that's not going to be possible in the UK anymore. Unfortunately, the Lexus LC and RC, and to be honest, I'm kind of surprised the RC was still on sale in the UK, are being phased out. So Lexus in the UK is only going to sell hybrids and EVs. Pour one out for the LC500, everyone.
Absolutely. Still, I am adamant, still one of the prettiest cars you could buy today.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely gorgeous. And a phenomenal bit of engineering as well, particularly if you know the backstory behind it.
Every aspect of it is just, yeah.
Yep. We've actually got an RCF locally.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're sounds
around.
Great.
I've seen a couple. It does sound amazing. I make jokes about, okay, well, my GX, it's the same engine. It's not. The block is, the core of the block is about the same, all right? You know, mine putting out.
It might have been mined originally in the same bit of ground.
Yes, it came from the same steelworks. Yeah, it's a bit different, as mine puts out a low stress 300 horsepower and the others are, these are putting out over 467 for the RCF. Anyway.
On to points of interest.
Yes. Which are also about things that have died out.
Yes. And we're going to start with the lunchtime read. And I stumbled across this at the weekend. It's a BBC News article. And it charts through the timeline of Little Chef and basically what happened to them. For those of us of a certain age, there is a soft spot in our hearts, particularly if we did any journeys with our parents, of the Little Chef. I mean, I think Petrol Blog was built off Little Chefs initially, wasn't it, for quite some time? Lamenting their demise anyway, that's for sure.
I'm sure there's an article on there somewhere about Happy Eater as well.
Yes. It's actually very interesting what happened and how it sadly in the end went the way of so many businesses. And actually, it's a bit of a reminder on how we've changed our habits.
A little bit. Sorry, it's that time of the year when we get stories like this because Londoners actually leave the M25 and have realised that things like Little Chef have...
Is there anyone we haven't insulted in this show?
No, I've been very nice to our intelligent listeners. Yeah, and it's a funny story. When I moved to Northamptonshire, then there was one of the Heston tweaked ones.
Oh, right.
Remember that sort of Last Blow, which they then, which he did all the stuff, it tested really successfully, and then the management decided they weren't going to go with it in the end. It wasn't quite
the same. They wore five places or something.
One of them was on the A14. It's now a Starbucks.
Yeah, our local ones are Starbucks as well.
It was really good, and the food was really nice. In that sort of just post-Heston bit.
Yep, but that's one for the rose-tinted glasses and fond memories.
Ah, yes, I remember the Olympic breakfast. list of the week this week. We couldn't find, nobody had, by the time of putting the show notes together, nobody had come up with a list of Italian-named cars not actually built in the city they're meant to be in, or even the country. What we're going to give you instead is a fine substitute. It is the best of the 81st Goodwood members meeting, which took place last Sunday. There's two links in the show notes, one to the 11 best moments of Sunday and one to 13 best moments of Saturday, is it?
Wildest moments.
Wildest moments, pardon me. I've only opened one of them just to remind me that there's a story here right at the moment. It's pretty cool. I don't know if we can ask if there's a favourite one.
Well, for me, I can answer this one. It's from the 13... Wildest Moments video, and it's Gordon shedding on a charge. Now, these are the merest, smallest of clips, but it just encourages you to click on the Goodwood Road and Racing link back into their YouTube channel to look at an enormous amount of other videos as well, because it was cracking, as one would expect. It was excellent. Excellent driving, no quarters given, etc., but it looked amazing fun, as ever.
Yes. Yes, totally. And we're going to try and do the sort of coverage and yak about a couple of races a bit later in the summer.
Yeah.
One of the Goodwood things.
Mm.
And finally this week.
Yes, and finally, not content with the new Toyota Prius looking smarter than most cars out there, the Prius FEV is going to get its own racing series in South Korea. I have actually reached out to Toyota UK to ask when it is coming to the UK. I've yet to hear a response. I'm not sure if I will ever hear a response.
Oh, you will, but it might not be one that's repeatable.
It could well be. But this is, oh, just, it's so silly. It's brilliant.
I think it's great. I really do, because, and I think that this is one of these times when racing can further the cause, so to speak, and can actually provide data and information which will feed back into the car. This is going to be a class of people, really sort of, you know, 18 drivers, really stress testing plug-in hybrids. And whilst you're probably not going to get the WLTP ratings from them, I think it's great. They will get crashed. They will get stressed. They might approach getting overheating. I think it's going to be very interesting just to see what can be done. And the idea is that they're all going to be as similar as possible. I want this to happen. I think it's cool.
Yes. And I have to find where the coverage is, because the first race is the 20th and 21st of the month.
Who knows? Anyway, whilst Andrew does that, parish notes.
Just a quick reminder, please, whatever podcast app you use that isn't Google Podcast for Android users, please do let us know.
Yes. Also, never ever share videos or quote tweet videos of Cybertrucks driving along things that aren't really unpaved roads or anything. Literally hundreds of people got in touch to tell me what they have or would drive instead, and that was before I muted the tweet.
Is that the one going through the forest that said, here we come Jeep or something?
Uh-huh. Yes, it did.
Well, to be fair, that road is like a main road through our town at the moment.
Yes, that's what everybody has said, and I don't need you to join in. I don't need you to join in. I mean, it upsets me the times that we have worked hard and linked to things in tweets, and they have not got over, yeah, I think it was 800 likes the last time I looked, and literally over 100 responses telling me what other people could possibly have driven over stuff worse, and I don't care. Frankly, go away. I know.
Well, if you will comment in public.
My mistake was quoting something which was innocuous but quite impossible, and I should have said it was a supercar, could have done it, and then everybody would just shut up, but no, I didn't.
Lessons learned.
Exactly. After how many years on social media? Anyway, folks, as long as it's not about Cybertrucks on tracks, don't forget that between now and next week, you can give us any feedback, share your thoughts on the show at Motory Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And I've just realized I've said that and people are going to do it out of spite on Facebook and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. Remember, you can support us financially via Patreon. Please leave a review and rating on Apple Podcasts or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. Andrew, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Best way to get in touch with me is either via Twitter or Mastodon if you search for Crack Windscreen. And I'm also increasingly active on LinkedIn under my actual real name rather than the made-up one I chose a decade ago.
Right.
But Alan, if people want to send you videos of Cybertrucks, what's the best place for them to do that personally?
Best place to do it is just after they've thrown their phone off a cliff. But if it's not about that, I'd be delighted if you get in touch with me via Twitter or Blue Sky, where I'm at AJP Bradley. That's Bradley. We will be back very soon. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.